Hey everyone, At the Letters is back and produced by Christian Ryan. I am Ben Nicholson-Smith on this episode of At the Letters. Ardens Welling is in Texas. He was just in Tampa, kind of a whirlwind week for the Blue Jays and for Arden. So it is just me here. This is May 27th as I record this now. And it's basically going to be a mailbag episode because I put out a call for a few questions on Twitter this morning. Got a lot of questions and some of them are pretty interesting. So my plan is basically to answer a bunch of these. It'll probably be pretty rapid fire and some of them I'll spend a bit more time on. Some of them I'll just kind of breeze through. But thank you to everyone who is listening. Thank you to everyone who sent a question. Probably won't get to every question, so apologies in advance if I do not answer a question that you submitted. Not really going to spend a ton of time on the Blue Jays and what's happened on the field, at least not directly, not off the top in the way that we normally would, partly because the Jays are kind of still in that 500 zone that they've been in for much of the season. 26 and 27 right now. They just beat Jacob deGrom and the Texas Rangers on Monday after being swept by the Rays. They did not play well against Tampa over the weekend, really making some mistakes on Sunday that were completely unnecessary. The bats weren't really there, so not a great series. Either you watched it and you know exactly what I'm talking about, or you didn't watch it and you probably don't want to relive that. So I'm just going to leave that one where it is. The Jays, as I've said, and as Arden and I have said for a while, this is a team that is a good week away from being where they should be, and a good week away from being in a really good position, and a bad week away from being in trouble. So that lends some intrigue and excitement to the games every day. It means that there's stakes. It means that you feel every win and every loss because the games do matter. But fundamentally, the Jays' position hasn't changed a ton. I think big picture as well, want to acknowledge, man, Arjun Namala just having an incredible season at High A Vancouver.
Gets a hold of one high in the air, left center field. Looking up is Jonah Cox, jumping up, but it's gone. Namala, one swing of the bat, has tied up this game at 101.
His super, super young player, 9 home runs already, 19 years old for Arjun Namala. He has also been joined by Trey Yesavage and Cal Steven. Yesavage has been off to an incredible start with the Vancouver Canadiens. So that is a very interesting development as well, as the Blue Jays have a lot of their top prospects consolidated at High A Vancouver. So some good things happening there. But I think, you know, the focus should be on the Major League team, is on the Major League team. That's where a lot of the questions for today end up going. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about the Major League team. Of course, prospects are connected to that. Of course, potential trades, the direction of the franchise overall. Some really good questions. So I'm going to dive in. And we're going to start with Dave. What do we really have here with the Jays? They sweep the Mariners and Padres, but get owned by the Rays. Feels like we're basically treading water. Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I think that's pretty fair. You know, this is a team that could win a playoff series. They obviously swept the Padres. That's a good team. So they could do it. They could also miss the playoffs. They could also be a seller. It's kind of all on the table. And yeah, they're basically treading water right now. They need to take a step beyond that at some point soon. Here's one from John. What are the most likely scenarios if the Jays are sellers at the trade deadline? So if they're sellers, I think you're talking about a Bo Bichette trade. I think you're talking about Chris Bassett being traded. Kevin Gausman has another year on his deal. So that's, you know, you probably hold on to him unless someone's really overwhelming you. Chad Green is probably someone who would come up in rumors and potentially be traded, as he's a pending free agent as well. But Bichette, Bassett, those guys are pending free agents. Bassett's been great. He would have a lot of value. Bichette would have value. The Jays obviously want to avoid that situation, but I think that is the most likely path. If the Blue Jays are sellers, those are the kind of players who would be in demand. This question comes from Jordan Stovra. And the question is, any update on Manoah? Would be a nice reprieve for the back end of the rotation. Couldn't agree more. That presence in the back of the rotation, even if he could be a number 4 or 5 starter, would be huge. So as of now, he's rehabbing, throwing 2 bullpens a week. He caught up with the media in Tampa as the Blue Jays were playing the Rays there. There's an article by my colleague David Singh that you can read. Long story short, Manoa expected back in the major leagues toward the end of this season. So that could be August and September. If he's back, you know, August 1st, the start of August, that would be really, really good. Maybe it gets pushed back deeper into August. We'll see. Jays don't want to put a timeline on it right now, but it is conceivable that he could be back for the final 2 months. Oh, here's one. I'm just seeing this one from Dave. Some of these I gave a lot of thought to this morning, so you'll get, you know, longer replies to some of these. I'm just kind of rifling through them right now. This one from Dave, I'm just seeing now for the first time. Has there been any chatter about a plan where Scherzer returns as a reliever or opener? It just seems to make the most sense. Not really. The plan is to build Scherzer back as a starting pitcher. A lot of what Scherzer does fits best as a starting pitcher, similar to Chris Bassitt, where at this stage in their careers, they have tons of knowledge. They are really good at keeping hitters off balance. Their expertise and pitchability is off the charts. Their stuff is not what it was in their primes, especially for Scherzer, where he used to be sitting 94, 95. Now that velo is more like 92. So he's not going to overpower you out of the bullpen. He does have the command and the durability to where he can repeat his delivery, to where he can throw pitch number 89 for a strike on the outside corner and live on the edges and keep that command deep into a game. Those are the attributes that make him a good starting pitcher. More to the point, and this is in an article written by Shai Davidi, I want to say at some point in May, but Scherzer himself has said that this isn't something that he's really looking at. So I wouldn't really give that a ton of thought right now. We're in May. The plan is still for him to come back as a starting pitcher. Where this could change would be if the Jays ran out of time. Then, you know, if this continues into August, like at a certain point, it takes a month to ramp him up. Well, that eats into how much he can contribute. So at that point, I think the discussion would change. But for now, the discussion, the plan is for Scherzer to be a starting pitcher. Here's one from Josh. Are there any realistic trade scenarios starting to percolate, either being actively discussed that you're hearing about or that you think should be? Internally, definitely teams are having discussions about what they might need, what might be out there. It's a bit loose right now. Teams are operating on a couple fronts. The draft is a huge priority for teams. That'll take place in early July, but they're simultaneously looking at the trade deadline, of course. It's tough to really execute a trade at this time because let's take the Orioles as an example. This is a team that could be a seller. Clearly, they're 15 games under 500. And if they stay on this path, they will sell. That's how it will happen. Whatever hopes and dreams you might have had going into the season, you have to be realistic. Michael Elias, their GM, will be realistic if they're still 15 games under 500 at the deadline. Mind you, that is 2 months from now. So the Orioles still have a chance in those 2 months to do what the Astros did last year and to recover. If they go 9-3 over the course of their next 12 games, if they go 11-4, you know, there are possibilities for this team to get back into the mix and to achieve what they set out to achieve this year. Maybe not a division title, but wild card is still technically possible. It's definitely less likely. It's not looking good. The Orioles are not in good shape, but they've Eflin back. Charlie Morton's starting to pitch a little bit better. You know, you get Grayson Rodriguez back. Maybe there's a pathway. So if you're going to try to make a trade with the Orioles, and I'm not saying just as the Jays, but as any team, and you're trying to complete a trade, then not only do you have to make them an offer that is good enough for them to set aside the opportunity to listen to any other offers, but you have to make an offer so good that it is going to diminish the small chance that they have of getting back into the race. So you're weakening their team and you're cutting them off from any other offers. If you're going to do that, the offer actually has to be really good. Now, are you going to do that as a buyer? Maybe. And I can understand the case for, you know, wanting to push, wanting to improve the team, of course. Like, that's a good intention to have as a front office. But what tends to happen this time of year, not just with the Blue Jays, but around baseball, you have teams that look at their internal options and they say, well, hey, we have this player who's underachieving, this player who's in AAA, and we could give him a shot first for, you know, 6 weeks and see what happens there. And usually by the time the All-Star break rolls around, you've exhausted those internal options. You've tried the prospect. Like the Jays did that last year with Spencer Horwitz, where Vogelbach didn't work. All right, let's try the prospect. And they tried him, and he actually played really well. So this time of year, the buyers are more inclined to go internal, and the sellers are understandably going to have a really high asking price. Teams are thinking about it, of course. Action, I don't expect anything soon around the game. That's not just with the Jays, but just around the game. Okay, related question here, somewhat related, from Patrick. And this question says, hey Ben, the Jays are still clearly missing a middle of the order bat. Is that something they are currently looking into from a trade perspective, or what are your thoughts? It seems like they have been one good bat short since the start of the season. Yeah, I mean, agree with that. They definitely could use another bat. I like this question. I mean, is it something they're currently looking into? Yes. They are constantly looking for middle of the order bats. And in a sense, I mean, they have to be. In a sense, this is like their job description. They always need to be looking for a middle of the order bat. It's easy to say and it's hard to do sometimes, but if you look at, you know, Shohei Ohtani, Juan Soto, Pete Alonso, plus the guys who they have signed, Santander, we'll get to him a bit later. A lot of questions about Santander, but they definitely pursue middle of the order hitters. Do they land them? No. And ultimately, it's about what you can actually do, who you can actually have on your roster. You know, I was thinking about this a little bit earlier. It's kind of like, for me as a writer, I can have a great idea for a story. I can be trying to come up with great story ideas and brainstorm and be as creative as I want. And maybe it's an idea that I actually could execute, and then the player gets traded or someone gets hurt or something shifts. And end of the day, I can't tell my bosses like I had a great idea. I have to have articles and I have to record podcasts and do other things. And for Ross Atkins, end of the day, it doesn't matter if he's trying to acquire a middle of the order bat, he has to actually do it. So are they trying? Yeah, they have pro scouts who are focused on other teams around the major leagues. They have international scouts who are following anything that's happening in Latin America, who are traveling over to Japan to watch Murakami, to watch other players in the MPB. They have eyes in the KBO. They're watching everything. So they, of course, need to be looking for a middle of the order bat. They have analytics people who are looking for middle of the order bats and someone who could pop, someone who could do better than what they have so far, who might be available. This is fundamental to having a good baseball team. It's kind of like having starting pitching. You need to have offense. And so they are looking for it. They want middle of the order bats. They are definitely looking into that. Really, it's whether you can acquire it. And that's the part that's harder to answer. Are they looking? Yes. Will they acquire one? I have no idea. I mean, it's going to be tough because there aren't that many middle of the order bats who get moved at a given deadline. And the ones who do get moved tend to cost a lot in return. It's pretty rare to see impact hitters moved at the trade deadline without impact prospects going back the other way. You could say the same for starting pitching. So the answer is they're looking. We'll see where it leads. Last one before I take a short break here. Okay, this one comes from Jays fan. Any top prospect nearing his MLB debut? Do you see Yesavage making his MLB debut this season? All right, like this question, top prospects getting closer to the major leagues. I don't know if you would say Aroldis Martinez is a top prospect anymore, but he has an 863 OPS in the last 28 days. Joey Loperfido, who came over last year in the Yusei Kikuchi trade, he has an 806 OPS in the last 28 days. Those guys are close. Would not be a shock to see either one in the major leagues really at any point, depending on the Jays' needs, depending on what happens at other positions. Those guys are getting close. Wouldn't say that they're top prospects. As for the top prospects in the organization, I mean, Alan Rodon, you could put in that group as well. He's obviously close. I do expect we'll see him again at some point this season.
He's swinging away here, and he has hit it out! His first major league home run. What a moment for Alan Rodon. A two-run
Namala mentioned him earlier. He's not playing in the major leagues this year. That's pretty much a fact. 19 years old. He's, you know, maybe gets to Double A, but he's not playing in the majors this year. Treya Savage, I mean, this is really interesting. And I don't think Treya Savage plays in the major leagues this year, but I'll outline a scenario here where it technically could happen. So I think that with a player who was drafted just last summer, you want to get him some reps in the pro game, of course. And that's just starting now. I mean, he excelled at low A. Now he's excelling at high A. He was just promoted recently to Vancouver. So he's going to stay there for a little bit. And I would be stunned if the Blue Jays moved him to double A before the All-Star break. I think at this point, you let him get that full, you know, first half of the season at low A and at high A, and you can maybe see where he's at that point. If he continues to dominate against high A hitters and he's doing the other things behind the scenes, he's preparing well, he's showing up on time, he's studying video, he's being a good teammate, he's, you know, repeating his deliveries, throwing strikes with his breaking balls, he's commanding things, he's overcoming adversity, the little things that you look for from a pitching prospect, holding runners, you know, working with the team's catchers, all these different things, coachable. If he's checking enough of those boxes, then yeah, at a certain point, and maybe that point is mid-July, you could say, all right, there's 6 weeks left in the minor league season. Let's be aggressive. Let's push you to double A and let's see how things go. So that's, I think, a realistic enough scenario. It's optimistic, but it's on the table for Treya Savage to finish this season at double A. So let's say he dominates a double A. I still don't think the Jays are planning anything around Treya Savage here. And I'm sure they don't want it to get in his head that he's, like, you know, potentially in the major leagues this year. They need him focused on the task at hand. They need him focused at high A right now. But let's say that the Blue Jays have an injury in September. Let's say that they're contending in September and they have an injury. Well, at that point, let's say Eric Lauer gets bumped back into the rotation. So he's starting. You need someone to cover a few innings in relief, someone who can give you bulk, and maybe you've run into a couple injuries. I mean, if you needed an arm, I don't think it's off the table for Treya Savage to be a consideration. I do think that internally, you know, they might not announce it. They might not discuss it publicly, but I think internally the Blue Jays would consider this. Mind you, it's not just as simple as, is he ready? Because you don't have to put Treya Savage on the 40-man this offseason. You don't have to have him on the 40-man right now. So as long as he's off it, that's one extra spot that you can pick up a reliever who was DFA'd. You can pick up a position player who's kind of interesting. You can do some different things with that roster spot. And you're also starting his option clock a little bit earlier. And you also just want to be mindful of his development. First and foremost, what's good for him? You don't want to bring him up to the major leagues if he's not ready. But technically speaking, could I see a scenario where he's dominating, he gets to double A, there's an injury, the Jays are in it, and they need an arm? Yeah, I think that that's conceivable. And you've seen that before with other organizations, whether it's a Jackson Jobe, you know, who debuted late last season with the Tigers, where Ryan Weathers made his debut in the playoffs, Shane McClanahan made his debut in the playoffs. So it's possible. I don't think it's likely, but it is possible. So that is a few questions. There's so many more, actually. Yeah, there are a lot more questions. I will get to many of those when we return on At the Letters. All right, we are back on At the Letters. Ben Nicholson-Smith here with you. Thank you to Christian Ryan for producing this podcast. Thank you for listening wherever you find your podcasts, for subscribing, leaving reviews. We appreciate all of that. I look forward to a full discussion with Arden next week. But now, more questions. And again, these are really good questions, so thank you to everyone who sent them in. I'm going to jump back in. This one from Adam Archibald. Do you think that Arjun Namala changes the organization's approach to dealing with Bo this summer? I don't think so, because you can have both on a good team. Both should be good for a while. So I don't really think it changes things. This one from Kit. Would the Blue Jays be better off benching Jimenez and Santander and letting the likes of Barger and Clement play more? Interesting concept, and I'll entertain it. From the questions that I got, sensed a certain amount of frustration with Santander, and that's not a surprise considering he is not producing. But I'll say this, Clement and Barger are already playing a lot. So if your bench is going to consist of Jimenez and Santander in this scenario, and Heinemann and Miles Straw, then pretty much that means you're playing Barger, Ernie Clement, Jonathan Class A, and Nathan Lucas every day. So do you see all those four players as everyday players? Do you really want Jonathan Class A in there every day instead of Anthony Santander? To me, I'd rather have the guy who hit 44 homers last year. It's not like it was 4 years ago. It was last year he hit 44 homers.
Santander smokes one to left. It's his show. Anthony Santander owns this place. Robs a game-tying hit from Guerrero. Smashes a home run.
I mean, that's a lot of home runs, and it wasn't just last year, and nobody's expecting 44 again, but he's a good hitter. So obviously not fully healthy now with the hip and the shoulder, but in time, I think it's clear you want Santander in there. Now, Jimenez, I think, you know, this guy's, he's making close to $100 million from the Toronto Blue Jays. There's not really a scenario where they bench him. When he's back, he's going to play. Would they be better off? I think that Jimenez's defense is so good that he deserves to be on a major league field on an everyday basis, even if he's not hitting great. His overall profile, when you look at really strong defense and a bat that's probably below league average, it's not so dissimilar from Ernie Clement. So if Ernie Clement took a day or two away from Andrés Jiménez in that capacity, I think that'd be fine. But basically, these guys are everyday players, and I would expect them to be playing every day. Next question from John. How far off the wild card do we start to become sellers? Probably 5-6 games, something like that. That's not really how the Blue Jays will look at it internally. Most teams will look at it as far as their playoff odds, their public metrics on that, and their internal ones. But basically, if the Blue Jays playoff odds dip below 10%, then that's when it starts to look more like sellers. Right now, I will look it up. I think it was around 27% last time that I checked, certainly well above that threshold. Yeah, the Blue Jays right now are 28.9% likely to make the playoffs. If they stay at that percentage, then they would be buying, in my opinion. Next, Adam says, does a Luis Robert trade make sense? Maybe a change of scenery motivates him. What would the cost be? And I got actually a couple questions on Luis Robert. So for anyone who's not following, I looked up the numbers. He is hitting 191, 586 OPS this year. He has 5 dingers. He's 21 stolen bases already. So that's pretty impressive. He is making $15 million this year. His contract has 2 $20 million options for 2026 and 2027. Each of those has a buyout of $2 million. So $15 million this year and some flexibility for how you handle them going forward. To answer your first question, in my opinion, a Luis Robert trade does not make sense for the Blue Jays. I don't think it's really a good midseason trade unless he's really performing on all cylinders. But he's not hitting well right now. And we're talking about a tooled out player here. I mean, this guy has incredible bat speed, 94th percentile. He's really fast, as you can obviously tell from the stolen bases, 87th percentile sprint speed. So this guy has a ton of tools, but he's not really putting it together. And to me, if you have a full spring to kind of work with him, great. You can be really excited about the talent here. But to acquire him midseason, you need him to click right away. You don't have a lot of time to work things out and to see if he can find his footing offensively. So furthermore, as a right-handed bat, what's the vision here? I mean, I do think that a right-handed bat is a good thing for the Blue Jays, so that's a positive. But he's only played center field in the big leagues. So are you going to say, hey, man, like, come on over here. We're going to give you a new position, which, you know, let's call it left field, maybe some right field. Let's say he plays left field. He's in a timeshare now with, like, Nathan Lucas, and he's trying to find his footing offensively midseason. That, to me, just, it's not setting yourself up for success. It's very expensive too, because $15 million plus prospects and potentially more next year. I think it's too much uncertainty of how is he going to adjust to reduce playing time? How is he going to adjust to the pitchers who are clearly have the upper hand against him right now and to a new position? I just don't love it. And then you look at the price, Hard to say. Really, it's going to depend on how he does the next 2 months, June and July, because teams will forgive what's happened so far. If he goes out and posts an 800 OPS the next 2 months, the price is going to be really, really high. So it's really what he does from here on that will determine the price. But looking back at last year for some of the position players traded, I looked at a couple of outfielders. So Lane Thomas, it was a three prospect package, including Jose Tena, who's an interesting position player, major leaguer with the Nationals. Jazz Chisholm Jr. And I'm picking Lane Thomas because that's kind of a bit more like boring. And then Jazz Chisholm Jr., this is someone who has speed, who has power. And he went to the Yankees from the Marlins in a three prospect deal, including Agustin Ramirez, who's now their starting catcher. Doesn't really have a lot of defensive value, but Ramirez can really hit. So that's a deal that looks really good for the Marlins right now. And obviously the Yankees were happy with their side of that trade too. But either way, Lane Thomas, Jazz Chisholm Jr., three prospects, one of whom is major league ready and has some real upside. So for the Blue Jays, if I'm looking at this, I'm thinking it's three prospects. So one of them is major league ready. Is that Class A? Is that Alan Rodon? Is that more? Like, I think if you're offering Class A or Alan Rodon, you get a seat at the table. I don't think that necessarily guarantees you get Luis Robert at all. And I'm just not convinced that Luis Robert Jr. is that much better than Jonathan Class A right now, than Alan Rodon right now. You look at the projections like Robert better, but not by a huge amount. For all those reasons, like, it's expensive money-wise, it's expensive prospects-wise, I don't think the fit is great. I'm not really there. That's just my personal opinion at this point in time. Question from our pal Blake Murphy. I don't know if this was partly in jest or fully serious, but I'm going to take it seriously. Who is the right-handed Ryan O'Hearn that could be out there? I looked at some right-handed bats because I do think if the Blue Jays are buyers, then they're looking for pitching, clearly, and a right-handed bat makes the most sense because they have Barger, Lucas, Varsho, Jimenez. They have a lot of left-handed hitters where if you had a right-handed bat, you could give yourself some options late in games for pinch hitting against tough lefties. You start this guy and you find ways to balance things out. So I just looked for right-handed bats who might conceivably be available. Austin Hayes, Andrew McCutchen, Ramon Laureano, Taylor Ward, Ramon Urias. I think those are the types of bats that the Blue Jays will certainly take a look at, get a sense of, you know, what they think, what their fit would be, what kind of defensive value they offer. I think that from a roster standpoint, they fit pretty cleanly. And someone like McCutchen, you know, late career, the upside is limited, but that's kind of a floor type addition. I think Taylor Ward is probably a little harder to get because he has a year of control beyond this year. That's going to be, increase the price, of course. Someone like Ramon Laureano, that's a, you know, we've seen him on waivers. We've seen him traded before. So, you know, he's going to be available and the price wouldn't be exorbitant. Austin Hayes, that's kind of interesting. He's having a really good year. He has reverse splits. So those would be some names that I would throw out there in that category. And this kind of connects to a question from Sophie. And she says, if the Jays were buying, what would their priorities be and who would be the best fit? So those would be some of the options for the offensive side. I think pitching wise, you're kind of rolling with whoever's hot in that moment. Teams really value who's healthy and who's producing now. So I'm not going to try to answer that too precisely, just given that, you know, we've seen it over the years where someone's value can go up or go down pretty quickly, depending on health. But yeah, the Jays, they could use a frontline starter. I mean, I think it makes sense for them to have eyes on the Marlins. And is it Alcantara? Is it Ryan Weathers? They're probably not trading Yuri Perez, but, you know, taking a look at those high-end options makes sense. And then you're going to scout the Pirates and see what Andrew Heaney has, because that's maybe a more achievable way to add to the roster. This one from Alexander Black. No question, just a comment. Dalton Varsho. All right.
Varsho. Deep to center. Gone! Dalton Varsho. show with his fourth career grand slam, and it's an even dozen now for the Blue Jays. What a great
game for the Jays. This one from Rob. Which players would you anticipate the Jays are willing to trade to upgrade the offense? Here are some names to get you started. Aurelvis Martinez, Jonathan Clase, Will Wagner, Joey Loperfido, Davis Schneider, Alan Roden. My opinion, they would trade any of those guys. They don't want to. They would rather keep them all, I'm sure. But in my opinion, they would trade any of those guys. In my opinion, they should be willing to trade any of those guys. I think that you look back to last year, right? The Jays are sellers. They get Wagner and Loperfido and Jake Bloss for 2 months of Yusei Kikuchi. So even a rental starter, it's not cheap. So if the Blue Jays want to add a rental starting pitcher, they have to be willing to part with talent. If they want to add a bat, they have to be willing to part with talent. So I think if you're trading Jonathan Clase or Alan Roden, you need to get someone back with term, someone who can help this team beyond 2025. But those guys are out there. That's possible. That's an option that will be on the table for Ross Atkins. So if he's giving up Jonathan Clase to get someone who can help this team for 2.5 seasons and be a impact third baseman or right fielder or whatever the case, like, I don't think too many Jays fans are going to be complaining about that. I think that those guys have to be on the table. Here's one from CGM Senior. So Pelly refused to renew Shanny, Brendan Shanahan. Chances are he doesn't renew Shapiro, then fires Atkins and Schneider. All three got to go based on performance alone. So Keith Pelly oversees MLSE. That, at this point in time, fully separate from the Blue Jays. So the Blue Jays are under the ownership of Edward Rogers. That's kind of a separate entity from MLSE. So the Blue Jays decision here, that's not a Keith Pelly decision. Mind you, as Keith Pelly said during that press conference, this is a results business. So I think that the results of this season, which right now just very, you know, still in the relatively early stages of it, but the results of this season will go a long way toward determining what kind of job security or what kind of future Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins and John Schneider have in Toronto. I think that's a safe bet. That's how sports usually work. Okay, this one from Corey. Should the Jays be sellers if they continue playing at this pace? Assets acquired for expiring contracts would be more valuable than compensation picks, would they not? So, yeah, I think if the Blue Jays were sellers, you would rather have prospects that you could get back for someone like a Bo Bichette than a compensation round pick. Same for Chris Bassett. You could potentially do better. But I think if the Jays are 500, I don't think you sell. I mean, it depends on how you get there. It depends on your health. It depends on a lot of things. If you get there and you're depleted, you've had some big injuries, and you don't have a lot of help immediately coming, maybe you have to be realistic and sell. But if you get to the trade deadline, you're a game above 500, you're right at 500, you know, you're 48 and 48, whatever the case, well, you have Alek Manoah coming back, and your team is fully healthy, and maybe you have a really positive run differential, and there are underlying things that are telling you that this team has just been a little unlucky. Bunch of people made mention of the 2015 Blue Jays 10 years ago. That team had a really positive run differential. They had been really unlucky. They were better than the underlying numbers showed. That's not really the case right now, but maybe for the next 2 months, the Jays are going to play some amazing baseball and not really be rewarded and be a 500. Well, if that's the case, then you push in. So a lot of it depends on how you get there. But if they continue playing like this, to answer this question really directly, I don't know that you necessarily trade Bo Bichette. Like, I think they would probably hold on and try to have a really good 2 months. Not saying you sell the farm. You're not trading Arjun Damala for Andrew Heaney to try to, you know, make this thing work and force it. But I would guess that they play it out and tinker. Clearly, the hope is to have some definition in the positive direction, and then you're not having to worry about that, because it would be a tough decision. But I think this team is, they're trying to win. They're trying to win. So that's my expectation here. A question from Blue Jays Corner, and this is a question that a few people asked. So thank you to anyone who weighed in on this one. What kind of contract do you think Bo Bichette will receive if he keeps up his current pace? Okay, so At this point, according to Baseball Reference and Fangraphs, Bo Bichette has 0.6 WAR. That would put him on a pace for 1.8 WAR, which obviously not great, not his potential. Let's look at some comps here. Gleyber Torres last year didn't have a good walk here. He ended up getting $15 million over 1 year. I'm picking free agents who are relatively young and played up the middle. Cody Bellinger, 1.3 WAR in his walk year. He got $80 million over 3 years. Dansby Swanson had a really good walk here, 5.5 WAR. He had $177 million on his contract. And Willy Adames just last year, 3.1 WAR. He got $182. So to me, this is all still on the table for Bo Bichette. If he has a 2 WAR season, which is kind of where he's trending, then it would probably be on the lower end. Maybe it's a shorter term deal. Maybe it has a couple opt-outs. If he turns it on, as we've seen him do many, many times, he could get a monster contract.
Diaz, deep short Bichette, long throw, got him! What a play by Bichette, what a scoop by Vladdy on the other end.
Look how far he goes to get
He's really young, he's a really good player, he plays shortstop. I think he would fit well in any market, big markets included. And yeah, I think that the big deals, the Adames deal, the Dansby Swanson deal, I think those are on the table. Now, I will say, like, going into the season, I mentioned Corey Seager as a potential comp for Bo Bichette. And Corey Seager signed a contract worth $325 million. And this was after a season that wasn't his best season. But Corey Seager had demonstrated a lot of power and just big-time offensive production in the major leagues. Bo Bichette hasn't had that same offensive production, that same power production. And we haven't seen a ton of power from Bo Bichette. I think if he wanted to get to the 325, he probably needed to be hitting 35 bombs this year. Doesn't seem like that's the direction things are going. So I still think that 180 is on the table. And clearly some of those shorter term deals would be on the table as well. So big range in my mind, still possible for Bo Bichette. Okay, just a few more. We're going to go pretty rapid fire here to wrap this up. This one from Cheryl. Thanks for the question, Cheryl. Any chance we see the Blue Jays make a trade ahead of the usual deadline flurry? I know that means an overpay, but it feels like if they wait until then, the window they have to seriously compete may be closed, which is fair enough. I mean, if you act now, you get the player for longer. So if you get a good player, then that helps your team for 100 games as opposed to just 60. Touched on this earlier. I just think it's tough to pull off. I think that the price you have to pay is really, really high. So on the position player side, that means Jonathan Class A and Addison Barger, Nathan Lucas, they get their chances. On the pitching side, that means that we see maybe more Jose Urania or more Eric Lauer than Blue Jays fans would ideally like to see. Spencer Turnbull eventually. But I think that this is the time of year that the Jays and most teams just go internally instead of paying that monster price. Here's one from Bird Dirtbags. Excuse making for Jays players and teams is a hallmark of the general Jays coverage. Why is that? Why does most media coverage insist on this fantasy that all Jays players are just better players than what we actually see? Are Toronto sports fans unable to handle the truth? Well, a lot of questions there. I think Toronto sports fans can handle the truth. They haven't gotten, with the exception of a Raptors championship, probably a lot more disappointment than joy. So I think they can handle it. I would probably disagree with the premise that there's excuse making for Jays players from the media as a whole. And the media too. I mean, it's the media is comprised of a lot of individual people. It's not like this monolith. It's I have different roles and skills and kind of interests than even Arden, and he's the co-host of this podcast. So and we view the game pretty similarly in a lot of ways. So the media is kind of a broad category here, but I don't think that the media insists that all of these Jays players are like amazing, amazing players. I mean, I'll sit here and I'll say that Anthony Santander, I think, has better things ahead. I think that Jeff Hoffman definitely has better things ahead, but I would say the same thing about Juan Soto, you know, if I was covering the Mets. And people might be disappointed with that. Or I think that if I was covering the Rangers, I would say that Jock Peterson definitely has better things ahead, even though he's been off to a dismal start. So, you know, I certainly could probably sit here and dunk on a Miles Straw and say, like, he's going to regress. He's not this good. Or write an article and like tear apart Tyler Heineman and say that this is the best month of his life. Like, you know, it's going to come down, and like maybe there's an appetite for that. Like maybe this is something that certain fans would like to see. I try to find a balanced tone with this and just be as, you know, try to gather as much information as I can, look at the stats, use my common sense approach, talk to people in the game, and then pass that along. So, you know, people with other teams look at Anthony Santander as like a really good player. People with other teams look at Jeff Hoffman as like a really, really dominant reliever. So the numbers would tell you for both those guys that better things are ahead. The eye test tells you that Santander is off balance right now, so we should look at that and listen to that. The eye test tells you that Hoffman has missed with his pitches right now, so we should listen to that. But again, does that mean he's going to miss forever, or is it maybe more likely that he finds ways to attack within the strike zone as he has done for so much of the last three seasons? So a lot in that question. I'll leave it there for now, but I'm not trying to make excuses for anyone. And right now the Jays look like a 500 team. That's what I'm saying. That's my opinion. I think the numbers bear that out as well, but we'll leave that one there. And this one will be the last one for this podcast. So thanks to everyone for the questions. To what extent is Schneider responsible for the state of the team right now? What is wrong with Vladdy's power? It's clearly not enough. Okay. Vladdy's power, he has the power. It's just not translating into game production. It's not translating into tons of home runs. I think it will. He's more of a line drive hitter than a towering, you know, fly ball, extreme launch angle guy. I think when you look at the overall production from Vladdy so far, he's still been a really good player.
Now this one driven to deep left field. It is gone! A no-doubter to left for home run number 7.
And I think that even better things are ahead. So that's not something that I spend a lot of time worrying about when I look at what he has done to this point this season, what he's done the last few seasons. This is an elite hitter. Schneider, I think that he didn't build the team and he doesn't step into the box. So there is a limit to what he can do as a manager. I think John Schneider's having a good season as the Blue Jays manager. I know, you know, we discussed on the last solo episode, I spent a lot of time talking about the Kevin Gausman pitching decision. That was one decision that, as listeners know, I didn't really like. But I think by and large, Schneider's made really good moves this year. I think he's done a good job. I have a hard time pinning the losses on him because the roster is what it is. I mean, John Schneider doesn't get to make the roster. That's the job of Ross Atkins. That's the job of even Mark Shapiro or others in the front office to oversee and to contribute to a process that leads to this roster. John Schneider, his job is to get the most out of it. And it's not his fault that Max Scherzer had his thumb, prevent him from pitching more than three innings. It's not John Schneider's fault that Anthony Santander isn't hitting or that Andrés Giménez is hurt. So I think John Schneider is doing his job, and I actually think he's doing it well. And I like what I've seen from John Schneider this year. So really would have a hard time pinning this one on him. I think he's got a good future as a major league manager. Doesn't mean that the 2025 Blue Jays are going to achieve their goals, but I think Schneider's been having a good season. I did really like the way that he managed the most recent Bowden Francis start, not the one in Texas, but the previous one at home, where after 4 innings and 2 runs, Schneider took Francis out of there before the third time through, came up, got Yuriel Rodriguez in. Rodriguez was dominant. Jays ended up winning that game in extras. So really liked that decision in particular to just get Francis out of there a little bit early as opposed to waiting a little bit too late. I liked the proactivity there. I thought it worked out really well. Hoffman blew that game, but Jays ended up winning it. So I will leave it there. Thank you so much for the questions. They were really good questions. Hope people enjoyed listening to this. We will be back next week with more. But in the meantime, take care. Enjoy some Blue Jays baseball. And thanks as well to Christian Ryan, our producer, and to Arden Swelling, who will be back soon with me on At the Letters.